U.S. Air Force is offering full military honors to a rioter who died on January the 6th. Ashley Babbitt was a veteran shot and killed by police as she climbed through a broken window inside the U.S. Capitol. Now, critics say that the Air Force's decision dishonors the military.
That sounds like Brian Stelter. I do believe it is. Of course, even in telling the story, he can't tell the truth. Ashley Babbitt was not a rioter. She was there to protest what she felt was a stolen election and to defend her country, but not to riot. And she's actually the one who stopped the rioting at that window when she got shot. She was taking on the guy who was knocking out the windows. We've talked about it before. We'll have some discussion about it today, but here's the headline. The military is now going to restore military honors for Ashley. They're going to deliver those honors. And of course, the left is apoplectic. I'm sure Brian will be very upset about that. But too bad, because Ashley deserves recognition for what she did on that day and of her service to the military. You'll hear more about that today. But that's not all we're talking about. This is actually a blockbuster show. These are names that you wouldn't, well, the same name that you wouldn't probably recognize. It's Bobby Powell. Bobby was probably one of the most important journalist chroniclers of January 6th on that day. Retired Marine, seasoned veteran radio host and journalist. He took some video of two situations which have never been solved. He talked to the FBI, he talked to congressmen, he's talked to everyone. Finally, he was threatened with his life if he kept talking about these videos that he'd taken. Well, Bobby has, in the process of this, had 9 heart attacks, and he just lost his life. He had the last one and died a few weeks ago. So Joe Hanneman is going to talk to me today. They became very close, and we're going to talk about those two situations. And we're also going to talk about the fact that there's a new January 6th committee formulating. And Joe is very optimistic about what that might mean in terms of making the wrong right. Doesn't that sound good? Making the wrong right. Making the crooked ways straight and the rough places plain. He didn't say that, but that's what God's all about. So you're going to hear a whole lot of truth today and maybe get some encouragement in the process. Well, of course, this is Sandy Rios 24/7, and you know you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can listen to the podcast on any podcast platform. And you know what? If you're not a podcaster, you can go to sandyrios.com, and it's very simple to listen to it at that point. So you can catch us on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, a whole bunch of other social media platforms. So if that's your favorite go-to, then check them out. If you like Telegram, we're there too. But before we proceed today with the discussion of Senator Tim Kaine's statement, I have to share this with you. Since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, over 100 abortion clinics have shut down. Listen to that. You know, but here's the heartbreaking part. Now the abortion pill has taken their place. It's being pushed on women everywhere, and it now makes up more than 60% of all abortions. But there really is hope. Every single day, preborn is rescuing lives, about 200 babies every day, by simply loving their moms and showing them their child through an ultrasound. And when a mom sees her baby and hears the heartbeat, everything changes. And here's where you come in. Just $28 provides that ultrasound. Think about it. Less than the cost of dinner out, and you're literally giving a mom and her baby a chance at life and a chance to meet Jesus, which is really finding life in the deepest sense. So I'm asking you personally, will you join me in this? If you just go to preborn.com/Sandy, that's preborn.com/Sandy, it's $28 to provide one ultrasound to one girl to save one baby. So any multiple of that is welcome, and I think most people can afford to give something. Thank goodness the economy is a little bit better right now. So if you can do something to help these kids, I know you want to, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. Well, there's lots to learn on today's podcast, and I hope you'll stay tuned and enjoy every minute of it on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice.
not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
If the president is serious about stopping political violence, then maybe he should start by rescinding the pardons for all the domestic terrorists who came to the Capitol on January 6th to kill cops, to kill Speaker Pelosi, to kill Vice President Pence. Let's have an honest conversation about the origins of this political violence and why it has risen so dramatically since Donald Trump's first term. We need to have that conversation if we're serious about stopping it.
Congressman Seth Moulton from Massachusetts, waxing eloquent on the House floor. And so we have a convergence of events. We've been talking about the assassination of Charlie Kirk, which just happened within the last 24 hours or a little bit more than that, perhaps. They finally found the person who's killed him, at least allegedly at this point. And now we are in this melee, or whatever you want to call it, this free-for-all of, pointing fingers. Certainly Seth Moulton is doing that. And so we're going to talk about a lot of things. Joe Hanneman, one of my favorites, Joe is, of course, a senior investigative reporter for Blaze Media, is covering all the Charlie Kirk things, but he's also covering all the J6 things. And so I thought that was an absolutely perfect clip to throw at him at the beginning of this show this morning. And without me saying anything, Joe, what are your thoughts and your responses to Seth Moulton saying that, Congressman Seth Moulton?
Well, what we see going on here, and also in the larger debate going on around Charlie Kirk's assassination, is just a lot of deceit. You know, there are people on the left are using projection. And that's what I'm hearing here is, oh, well, January 6th, let's have a conversation, except they don't want to have a conversation because the conversation is nobody went there to kill Nancy Pelosi. That has never been suggested. No one was ever charged for something like that. So, you know, they're throwing out propaganda points, but they don't want to hear what has been over the 4.5 years since January 6th parsed out as truth. And the truth is they created a monster and they're sticking with their story. When we found out over time is that we've been lied to. We've been lied to by the corporate media. And they continue to spout the same points that the corporate media were putting out directly after January 6th. So, and we were seeing this also with Charlie Kirk. He's a hate monger. And look at what you give out, you get back. Some of the most horrible things being said, which are predicated on filthy lies. And this is something that the left needs to be called out on because they don't want to have a conversation. Charlie Kirk had lots of conversations, and that's why he was killed. So, we've got to get beyond some of this deceitful propaganda that gets put out.
Yep. Before I leave Moulton's statements, I also want to add that he said that the people on January 6th not only came to kill Speaker Pelosi, they came to kill the Vice President Pence. Well, we don't even need to go into that, but I have to just put a marker down that there's no evidence of that whatsoever. That guillotine seems to be some kind of little toy that somebody put up that was trying to make it look that way. I don't know if you have any more information on that, Joseph, but that's the last thing I know about it.
Well, the gallows that were constructed in the very early morning hours between 6 and 6:30, and we still don't know who put them up. That was there is a lot of suspicion that was something that was brought in and created. These were not protesters that built that was a stage prop. And as you saw, the number of wire service photos that were framed very creatively to make it look like it was an actual gallows when it couldn't have supported the weight of a cat, much less a human being. And there's no evidence that this was brought there and set up by a protester or a Trump supporter. So it's again, this is creating a narrative versus pursuing truth. And, you know, that's one of the many many issues that I'm hoping the new January 6th Select Subcommittee will get to the bottom of. You know, we've gotten partial answers, but we need to get all of the information out there. So it's because that's the only thing that's going to deflate this deceit from the left, that they continue. They don't care about facts. That's why they never change their message, even when the facts are brought to the front, even when the receipts are very clear and what they're saying is disproven. You know, they continue to lie about the National Guard and President Trump on January 6th, even though that has been proven to be another vicious lie. So, you know, when you don't have the truth on your side, what do? You obfuscate, you lie, and you stick with the script. And we just continue to see this. And I don't think that's ever going to change when it comes to the left.
No, except that. Even with January 6th, I believe that the at least the doubt of the established narrative has gotten into the DNA of American people. Now, it's not true of everyone, but there's not as much enthusiasm. There's more puzzlement, especially after the Russiagate thing. I think people are really recognizing that they have been manipulated by information to believe certain things. I want to mention one last thing before we go on to this recent loss of one of the most important chroniclers of January the 6th, and we'll get to that in just one second. But this is the last thing I want to say that Seth Moulton said, Joe. He said this, of extremist violent attacks in America, extremist violence, violent murderers, 76% are from right-wing extremists. 4% are from left-wing extremists. What? I mean, I know you don't have stats in front of you, but I just can't. That's bizarre. All of the killings, the riotings, and all of these things are done by right-wing extremists?
He pulled that one out of a dark place, let's say. That's ridiculous. All you have to do over the past 5 years is make two columns and write them down. It's not that there are none from people who are of a conservative bent. You know, the assassin in Minnesota came from background of a man of faith. And, you know, that is definitely an exception. But if you look at all from the congressional baseball shooting, you know, the responses to this drumbeat of hateful, true hateful rhetoric, not what they're accusing the right of doing. You know, that, and that's statistics I'd love to know outside if he pulled it out of his rear where that came from, because that is certainly not the case. It, you know, the violence is a tool of the left. That's why we continue to see Antifa trying to torch and burn down the ICE facilities in Portland, attacking ICE officers and other police officers across the country. Antifa is a fascist organization, despite their name being anti-fascist. That is a tool of the left, and so is propagandizing. And here it sounds like he just made something up there, because that is that's not the case. The record's very clear, and they would have to run from it if they were honest. But so they'll just turn around and say, "No, it's all a right wing issue."
All right. Well, as you were talking, I look back and it says this information, this data, came from the Anti-Defamation League, and that is like the sister organization to Southern Poverty Law Center, who do make up their own facts.
That explains it.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
so now we know.
Yeah, that explains it, that the SPLC and the ADL are notorious. You know, they accuse everyone else of being hate groups when, in fact, that is indeed what they are. And if they are putting it out, you can be very skeptical as to the truth of the matter.
Yeah. Okay, so Joe, now I want to pivot back to what we were originally going to talk about here, and that is the death of a journalist who was one of the most, I think, significant chroniclers of the events of January the 6th. And just to start our discussion, I thought it would be a good thing for people to hear from Bobby Powell in his own words. I believe this is a time that you captured interviewing him, and this would be clip 2.
I'm right there at the precipice of the Columbus doors when I hear a man in my left ear yelling, "Hold the line, hold the line, hold the line." Now I feel his hands on my back pushing me inside. My camera turns around, and by the grace of God, I catch a good video of this guy holding the doors open with a pole. As soon as I got everything together, I put it together, a nice little package, and I sent it to the FBI on January 15th. And to this day, he has not been identified. I don't care about money. I want this crime solved. They were calm. They were cold as ice. Okay, they knew exactly what they were doing. They acted like they were supposed to be there. Who are these men? Why have their images never been uploaded to the FBI database? Matter of fact, I've got the literal receipts right here in my pocket. United States Postal Service sending these thumb drives out 20 at a time. Reporters, politicians, they're just ignored. And it's really making me angry. I've given this video to everybody with a pulse in media. But nobody wants to talk about my two guys.
All right, so that's the voice of Bobby Powell. And there's a reason why we're talking about him today. Besides, it's always interesting because nothing has been solved. Is that Bobby died just recently? He had 9 heart attacks. And Joe knew him very, very well. He got a lot of his information from his documentaries when he was working with Epoch Times. From Joe, from Bobby Powell. And so, Joe, kind of give us an idea. We've heard his voice. Who was Bobby Powell? Who was he? And why did he, what was his journalistic background that he should go to J6 as a journalist?
Well, Bobby Powell is a Marine veteran, and he got out of the service in the early 80s. And after his discharge, he went to journalism school in Michigan. I believe in Detroit. He went to a broadcast journalism school, and he spent the next, well, really the rest of his career up until the day he died as an investigative journalist. And Bobby had his own podcast called The Truth is Viral, and he also had a program on a radio station in Cheboygan, Michigan. And so he was at January 6th as a credentialed journalist. He had a riot helmet on with a big press stenciled on the front. And you know, Bobby's a burly kind of guy, so he really did stand out. And so this was going to be his final journalistic assignment. His thought was that he would retire after this protest. Of course, he had no way of knowing what this was going to turn into, and that it indeed was his last assignment, but it lasted 4.5 years, and indeed took him right up to his last breaths. So he captured some incredibly important footage that we still don't have the answers, that what appeared to be government agents' assets, you call them what you will, they were dressed like feds, and vandalizing the Capitol, pulling out a huge sheet of tempered glass, and then trying to talk people into climbing through it and going into the Capitol. And another man who was holding open the Columbus doors with a giant wooden pole and pushing people through into the foyer, you know, very violently shoving them in the door. And neither one of these fellas ever appeared on any most wanted site. And Bobby, almost immediately after January 6th, took his video. He had nearly 30 minutes of very nice high-definition video, tried to get the FBI to look at it. They did not call him back. He tried, you know, he tried media. I don't know how many places he tried before he and I hooked up, which was more than a year later. And when I did my first interview with him, after we were almost done talking, he broke down and cried. And he said, you know, I told him, of course I believe you. This is very credible, and this video speaks for itself. And so this is outrageous. This stuff should be investigated post-haste. And he was so grateful that somebody took him seriously after he was, you know, it's almost like he was just being gaslighted. by everyone. And, you know, of course, at that time, there was a major cover-up underway of what really went on January 6th, from the courts to the DOJ, to the FBI. They did not want these types of videos to get out there because it punched a hole in the narrative.
Yeah, totally. I just as an aside, I remember when I was at CWA, I was doing their daily radio program. I was their president, too, but I did this every day. I interviewed, this is a totally different topic, but stay with me. I interviewed a German doctor with a big lock of blonde hair down on his just bushy hair, very, very German. His father had been a Nazi, and I do mean a Nazi. And he had made it his life to help people. He was very ashamed of his past. And he had been to North Korea, and he got past when Secretary of State, whatever her name was. Anyway, she was there, took a cadre of people, and he was there. He had gone to North Korea and actually donated his skin for these burn victims. I mean, he was a remarkable man who really gave everything he had to make the North Korean people whole. But he had seen how horribly they were treated and how they were starved. And he peeled off a bunch of journalists to go down into the country and to see what the truth was. Well, I'm just blanking out on her name. She was the Secretary of State under Clinton. But while she was holding, you know, talking about how wonderful North Korea was. So he'd been all over Europe, the European Union, the UN, all of this. And no one would believe him. And he sat with me in that studio and started to tell me these things. And I had just been to North Korea, actually. I was there on 9/11. And as he started to talk, I just started to weep. When he painted a picture of operations without anesthetic, with the most horrendous conditions, starvation, all of this. And when I started to cry, Joe, same thing. He began to weep. He said, no one. Well, I tell them these stories and they go, so? In the Europe, they just say, so? No one has ever, you know, responded the way you're responding. And he was just so overcome. So I think it's the same but different. Horrible when you know something like that and no one will listen to you. And so that's what was happening to Bobby. I want to go back and I want to play a clip of, when you were there with Bobby. And then I want to just touch on, you've mentioned those two incidents, but let's for at least linger on them a little bit so that people understand the significance. This actually is clip one, Bobby Powell. Let's listen.
Retired radio journalist Bobby Powell has been trying to blow the whistle for 3 years with video evidence he shot on the east patio of the Capitol.
I don't care if you're carrying an American flag or wearing a Trump hat. Nobody was going into the United States Capitol through a broken window during a riot on my watch. You know, I was there as a reporter. I got down to the Capitol just before 2, and the west side was already under attack. And as soon as I get up to the top of the Capitol steps, I hear banging and crashing to my right. So that's really good footage there that you want to see. I turn my camera around, and there's a man pulling that window completely from its frame. He asked me, why don't you guys open up the rest of it? And I said, because that would probably be illegal. So, you know, it was clear from the things that he said to me that his intention was to open up that window and get people to go inside.
Joe, I realize that you and I have discussed this many times, but in the spirit of understanding that people, there are different people listening every time, and they don't necessarily retain this stuff. And because J6 is getting ready to crank up, just look at the Seth Moulton quote. And we're going to get another hearing, a J6 hearing. We need to establish again, did anybody besides Bobby capture that moment of that guy breaking out that window?
I have not seen anyone else capture that video. Well, we know there were other people in that area that captured when it was initially broken a few minutes before that by a protester, Hunter Emke, who jumped up and kicked his foot through, and it started to break that window. There was a lot of people captured that, but as far as I know, Bobby was the only one because he had been talking to this gentleman who came up and was trying to convince him, this was before he pulled the sheet of glass out, to have him do that, you know, finish pulling the window apart and then go ahead and go into the Capitol. And then Bobby walked away a little bit, and he turned around, and as he did, he captured this just dead on, this guy pulling out this huge sheet of tempered glass. And I mean, this had to be 3.5 feet wide, probably the same bit tall. It was very large, and of course, it's tempered glass. It wasn't going to shatter. And he pulled it, and it folded into itself, and then he saw Bobby, and he saw the press, and he saw that there was a camera pointed at him, and he dropped it like a hot potato, like, oh, I didn't want to be seen doing that. And he tried to, you know, innocently wander away. And another man came running in and shoved him. And then the most remarkable thing happened with this fellow. He turned around and accused this redheaded fellow that had just told him, don't do that. He said, you just broke that window. And he starts hitting the man and accusing him of breaking the window. And, of course, Bobby's got all this on video. And so it's perfectly apparent that this fellow is lying, that he indeed was the one who broke the window. And he created a distraction by going after this other fellow who eventually backed off. And then this guy kind of melted away into the crowd. And, you know, he doesn't appear anywhere that I've seen the rest of the day. So it was a very significant moment, especially later on, as we got sense that there was direct involvement and incitement by police and very likely by federal employees, if not agents or informants, up and around the Capitol. So interesting timing that this is coming back up with Bobby's death, because these questions still have not been answered, and we haven't gotten the transparency we had hoped out of the FBI or the Department of Justice. So now we're hoping that the House committee will do what nobody else has done and start actually revealing some of the secrets that have been covered up.
You know, Bobby makes the comment that there's two. We're going to get to the second one in a second, because he captured these two very significant moments. So the first one is this window thing. And he says they're so cool. They're so calm about this. And you see that on the video, don't you?
Yes. They stand out from the chaos that was going on. A very excited atmosphere. You can hear it on the video. There's a lot of people on that patio, and they stood out because they moved methodically. They were executing some kind of a plan. It's perfectly apparent. And like I said, the one fellow just melted away, and the other one stayed at his post holding the door open until he got a blast of tear gas in his face, and then he kind of collapsed and got helped away, and we also don't see him again. So, you know, these fellows were at a very important entryway to the Capitol, the ceremonial front door of the Capitol, trying to incite people to go inside, attacking and breaking the glass, and then literally physically pushing people into the building, you know, yelling, hold the line, while they're holding open a door with a massive wooden pole. And, you know, the DOJ, if these people had been regular protesters, they would have been charged with felonies up the wazoo and been facing decades in prison. And yet we don't even know who they are 4.5 years later.
Well, the reason we know that he was pushing people into the Capitol is because Bobby was one of them. Didn't he get pushed by that guy
at
the door?
And
yeah.
His own video, you obviously you can't see the hand on his back, but you can see as it kind of speeds up, because this fella had some strength, and Bobby's not a small man. So he put his hand in the small of his back and shoved him in there. And we didn't realize this at the time, but the Capitol Glass Man, as we nicknamed the first one, he was almost directly in front of Bobby. So he ended up going into the Capitol, and that was the last we saw of him. But the second man, who was named Capitol Doorman, he shoved Bobby and he shoved others. He kept saying, "Hold the line, hold the line," and was pushing these people inside. When there were people trying to get out, because there was a lot of tear gas in there, he was pushing people inside. So, you know, Bobby knew while this was going on, something is very, very wrong here. And that's why he quickly, after January 6th, took this to the Joint Terrorism Task Force of the FBI. And they were not only not interested, eventually he kind of got a reputation within the FBI and the DOJ for pushing this like he was some kind of a nuisance. And there was even a reference made in some court filings about him, which I think tells you that he was very much on the right track. And, you know, this became his life's mission from that point on. I think it's largely responsible for his health failing and leading up to his death.
Joe, you're a reporter. You're a seasoned reporter. And I know that you have a real nose for truth and what isn't true. I mean, you have to have a BS meter because people are always going to want to tell you something. Everybody has something to say. What was it about Bobby that made you believe him?
Well, when we eventually in our conversation got to talking about faith, and over the next couple of years, I got to know more and more about his faith in Christ, and that grounded him, and it was his motivation, and the reason that he was willing to take the abuse that he took and to be ignored was because he had vowed he would not cover up truth, that he would, of course, we know that truth is not a thing. It's a divine person. You know, Christ himself is truth. And, you know, so we had those conversations, and when he teared up and said, "It's just good to know that someone believes me," I said, "I absolutely believe you, because when your search for truth in this is grounded in Christ, and this is how I approached all of the work I did on January 6th. And I think the reason many things dropped in my lap, and I mean almost literally dropped in my lap, had nothing to do with me, but I think there was divine guidance." And so when I learned that about Bobby, and of course combining that with the fact that he had very, very solid evidence that at the very least should have warranted an investigation, but when nobody would look at it, then you get very suspicious, because people were charged with multiple felonies for much, much less. I mean, these fellas would rank up there with the worst of the worst on January 6th in terms of bad behavior.
Yeah, and these guys, to beat a dead horse, I've spent the last 4 years myself interviewing J6ers who've spent months and years behind bars without even a trial in the most filthy, rank, wretched circumstances. So just to draw a comparison, and these guys are doing, they're free. Whoever they are, they're free. And you write in your article, and by the way, I should say, Joe just wrote an article about Bobby, and it's Bobby Powell gave his last breath working to expose January 6th corruption. And that would be at, is that at Hanneman Reports, or is it The Blaze?
Yeah, that's my, you'll also find it at The Blaze. The one on my personal website has some facts in it that were not in the Blaze piece, but you find it in both places.
Okay, HannemanReports.com, HannemanReports.com, or The Blaze Media. Now, you write in this article that a prominent Michigan Republican Party official, I could probably guess who, but I'm not going to, offered him $200,000 to go away. Bobby refused. And then he was threatened if he didn't put a lid on his January 6th Fedsurrection talk, he could be killed. Gosh, why in the world? Why would they be so extreme?
Well, and we don't know the answer to that either. Bobby was invited to a lunch at a Mexican restaurant. Somebody he knew in the GOP, and he was shocked at the offer of money, and he literally told this fella, you can't afford my honor, because don't even go down that road. And then, so if we can't entice you with cash, we'll suggest that, because Bobby made some remark to this fella about being killed and being silenced, and the remark came back, well, that could be arranged.
And wow. This is a Republican politician. Oh, yes. A party official.
Yep. Stone cold. And Bobby was so unnerved by that. That was one of his motivations to sell his home. Now, he had been debanked. YouTube demonetized him because of all of this. So he had run out of money as well. But he was afraid for his life. So he sold his home in Michigan. He bought an RV, hooked it up to a pickup, and he lived in that RV pretty much the rest of his life. And he moved around every couple of nights because he was worried about being assassinated. I mean, he was out and out threatened. And so this is a very serious story. And the amount of strain this put on this man who had I think, a history of heart disease, but he was so determined that it drove him, even when his heart was operating at maybe 15 or 20% efficiency, and he had a defibrillator backpack before they were able to implant one to try to keep his ticker going. And he wrote me some things 2 weeks before he died, and I tell you, I shed many tears because he and I were supposed to do an interview. I was so concerned when he sent me this note on August 11th, and he titled it Final Thoughts. And I thought, oh dear, what's going on? So I quickly read that, and I responded, said, Bobby, we've got to do an interview. I need to do an update. And due to breaking news and other things, we just never got it set. And the next I heard was that he had died. But he writes in there about his motivation over the past 4.5 years for pushing this, and that was his daughter, Ashley. She died in 2012 at age 24. She had an idiopathic heart attack, and he had tried to talk to his daughter about Jesus and about his love for Christ, and he didn't feel he had done enough because, as I describe in here, you know, oh, Daddy, I don't believe in that stuff. And he said, I could never speak to her about Christ's love for us. She'd just look at me with her big, beautiful eyes and say, oh, Daddy, you know I don't believe in that. I thought I would have plenty of time to teach her about Christ, but she died at just 24 from an idiopathic heart attack. That right there was what fueled Bobby when it came to January 6th. I lifted her ashes to the heavens and swore to Almighty God that I would never be afraid to tell the truth again for fear of being called a conspiracy theorist or a kook, even though all of my conspiracy theories turned out to be true. And then here's the real money quote from this entire email. I swore that I would tell the truth to my last breath, no matter what the cost. And when I read that again after he passed away, the tears just streamed because he wrote the ending, and his work, much like the work of Charlie Kirk, his work has to go on. We need to find the answers. But the even more important lesson is what the motivation is, and that's the truth, that is Jesus. And that's where Bobby came from, and I, you know, love to imagine him with his dear daughter in heaven. It just, mm-hmm. you know, it gets you right where you live.
Absolutely. And also the one thing we didn't say is that he had 9 heart attacks during this last 4 years, 9 heart attacks, pressure that he was under. So, all right. So you have mentioned this, and you and I have actually talked about this too. They're formulating a new J6 committee. It's not really a committee, as I understand it, Joe, not like the others. It's part of judiciary. It's like a subcommittee. It's actually only a panel of like 8 people. And they actually have some pretty dreadful people on there, to be, for my part. But I'm sure you know all about this. I could fill in the blanks for some. But I think that the chairman, Barry Loudermilk, I can't recall if we've talked about this. I feel like I've said this to you before, but forgive me if I'm repeating myself. I interviewed Congressman Loudermilk from Georgia when the first J6 committee that he chaired started out two years ago or so. And I just didn't have high hopes because I know what leadership in the House is like, and the current, that includes the current leadership. So didn't have high hopes. But I think that when Barry Loudermilk got into it and he realized what the truth really was, that he got more and more enthused. So I think he has a fire in his belly. Whether he'll get the money and the resources, I don't know. But I want to know what you think. I mean, do you have contact with him? Do you have some way to, will they have a chance to see Bobby Powell's videos and see what he reported?
Well, here's a little piece of news I can share with you, because the congressman and his staff on that committee saw this article that I wrote about Bobby after his death. And I made reference in here to one of the stories Bobby wanted to work with me on, that he had discovered in the Capitol Police security video there was a gap on the security camera that was pointed from the inside out at the Columbus door, where this doorman was holding the door open and shoving people inside. Well, conveniently, the 8 or so minutes that this guy stood there were missing in what had been uploaded by Loudermilk's staff to Rumble. And I went up there and I downloaded it and I looked and I thought, wow, he's right. This is missing. Now, you know, we have no idea why that is, but they read this, and one of the staff members a day later sent me a chunk of video. I forget how long it is. I have not looked at it yet, but it's the missing.
Oh, you're kidding me. Oh, my gosh, Joe.
I'm hoping that it indeed shows the door, that the view will show that, because I know that was Bobby's, and he discovered this on his own. He kept doing his own investigating, and so they're listening, and they have resources and ability to find, and there are other gaps. There are other gaps in the video cameras that are missing, and when they find out about those things, I am confident they will go and find them. Congressman Loudermilk will be up against it. The Democrats are going to try to make a circus out of it. But the public hearings are not where the money's going to be made on this one. It's going to be the investigative work. And they've already been doing this for a couple of years, and I think they've got a good handle. And the biggest thing they have is complete and total support of President Trump.
Yes.
He's the one that hauled them all up to the White House and sat them in a room and said, after 8 months, it's time to get this committee formed. He wanted to see this happen much sooner. So he assigned senior staff to this. And Loudermilk has been told, if you have any problems anywhere, you come back to us. And, you know, the president obviously has tremendous influence. He's not going to allow this committee to fail. The Democrats will try to sabotage it. And, you know, they make fools of themselves at a lot of these public hearings, including Judiciary Committee. But, you know, I believe that that the grunt work with their staff has been underway. And they picked that right back up where they left off. And I do think we're going to learn a lot. But they've lost precious time. That 8 months could have been spent very productively.
Yes. Well, of course, when we get into this, you and I have to talk about it again more. But I want to just read what I know about this, at least from this article. It isn't attributed. I don't know who did it. I know who wrote it, but not wrote the outlet. 8 lawmakers. Loudermilk will be presiding over just 8 lawmakers appointed by Speaker Johnson. And, of course, Hakeem Jeffries will be able to consult on on 3 of those members. So he pointed to Representative Troy Nehls of Texas. You know, I don't know if you want to say publicly, but I don't know. I'm confused about what Troy Nehls' role was on J6. I know he helped. Somehow I read that he helped them apprehend J6ers or stop them or something. I don't know if you have a factual thing. I don't know. I know you don't want to give an opinion, but do you have any knowledge of what his role was on January the 6th?
I do. Yeah, Troy Nehls was on the floor of the House. He was one of the representatives who stayed behind after there was an evacuation, and this was right around the time that Ashley Babbitt was shot. He was at the main House door, and he was guarding that. They had barricaded that, and there were people up against the main House entrance who were smashing the glass, who were trying to get in there. Now, we don't know necessarily who those people were, but there's some famous photographs of some of the Capitol Police Protective Division officers with their guns drawn, pointed at the windows. And Troy Nehls was talking to these people through the broken glass. You do not want to do this. He literally had a wooden pole from one of the stands that apparently had held up some hand sanitizer or something, and actually jabbed at some of these people when they were trying to get in. And I think eventually they looked through there and realized, I've got six guns pointed at me and a former sheriff standing guard there. So, and one of the reasons I think Nehls is probably a very good person for this is that he was not afraid to speak the truth about Ashley Babbitt's killing, and he said very early on that she was murdered. It was a homicide. It
okay.
was not a good shoot. So,
oh, okay,
I,
good. I'm glad to hear that.
And he did his own work and his own committees on behalf of Colt McAbee, who was maced and beaten at the D.C. gulag, and trying to get the video released from the jail over there. So I think he's got fire in his belly. I mean,
okay.
He literally said at one point, he had a press conference and said, it's almost like they wanted this to happen.
Yeah.
He said the thing that nobody was going to say out loud. So I think it's a very good choice.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I'm so glad to hear that. Well, was that the window where Ashley was shot?
No.
Okay.
No,
so different
one. That's the main house entrance. The hallway outside of the entrance to the speaker's lobby, which is this ornate, beautiful lobby where, you know, the lawmakers will go and they'll have conversations between themselves, and there may be maybe lobbyists in there during floor sessions. And so right outside there's a set of glass doors in the hallway, and the group that she was in was outside the speaker's lobby, which had also been barricaded. So, you know, Nehls could see the speaker's lobby entrance from where he was on the House floor. So it was within visual range, but this was a
different
window,
okay.
A different entrance.
Okay. Well, one last thing about the committee. This will raise your hair on the back of your neck, probably. Jamie Raskin is going to be an ex officio member of the new committee. He won't be counted in the eight, but he'll be there to help. And in a statement, he said, the Republican-chaired panel will represent an opportunity to examine the constantly growing criminal records of all the hundreds of violent felons, cop beaters, and white nationalists who Donald Trump pardoned and released onto our streets on his first day of office. So he'll be a huge obstacle, but that's going to be going convening pretty soon. Now, on, I think, a lighter note and a better note, let me just play this news story for a second. This would be 3B. Let's listen.
Air Force veteran Ashley Babbitt was one of the rioters who stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. She died after a Capitol Police officer shot her in the shoulder as she attempted to climb through a broken window leading to the Speaker's lobby. Far-right MAGA supporters have since propped her up as a martyr for trying to stop the electoral victory of President Joe Biden. The officer who shot Babbitt was cleared of any criminal wrongdoing.
Just boom. There was no reason for that.
Years later, the U.S. Air Force is now extending full military funeral honors to Babbitt, reversing the Biden administration's decision in 2021.
Yeah, and he's not happy about that, that reporter. So anyway, they are going to offer, they're offering her military funeral honors to Ashley. I believe that's a done deal, right? Or is it still being decided?
No, it's a done deal. There was an attempt in the Senate to derail that by one of the most far-left legislators on Capitol Hill. But Senator Tommy Tuberville raised an objection and derailed the resolution that was trying to force the Air Force to withdraw that. And that report that you just played is an example of what is wrong in media.
Yes.
Predicated on lie after lie after lie. She didn't storm, she didn't riot, and in fact, she tried to prevent it, and eventually she stopped the riot in the hallway because she decked the main rioter. She punched him in the nose, knocked off his glasses, shocked the heck out of him, and then she climbed up in that windowsill to get away and was immediately shot dead by Michael Byrd, who was in a hidden position. So that goes into someone who hasn't watched the video, doesn't know the facts, and doesn't care. And it's so frustrating. And I am so glad that the Air Force has done this, because people like this reporter and many on the left are so angry about this. And Aaron Babbitt told me, he said it's just gives me tremendous pleasure to see these people so angry about it, because it is the right thing to do. She served honorably for 14 years in the military, and she is none of the things they have accused her of, and the lies have got to stop. And this is why I continue to investigate her killing, and for him to say, cleared of all wrongdoing, well, just wait, because Michael Byrd is being reinvestigated as we speak, and I don't think it's going to come out the same way the second time. So it just goes to show you that, you know, facts can be very inconvenient things, as I believe Reagan once said.
Yes.
And this is so angry and unnerving to hear that, because they sing out of the same choir book. They use the same terminology. They call her a rioter, and they, by extension, accuse her of violence. The only violence she did was taking out the rioter. She took him out because he had just smashed his third window after practically assaulting the police officers, and he was maniacal. And she put a stop to him, and he has admitted since then, Zachary Alam, he has admitted that he was going to climb in that window himself. She saved his life by punching him in the nose, and she climbed in that window and was killed.
Joe, as we have discussed, but again, I want to repeat something. There is really good video now that shows, it's hard to capture, but we have so much video from that jammed up place in that moment when she was shot. That piecing it all together, you can see that Ashley is trying to stop this guy. And she's just a little girl. She's not that big. Now, she's very good in the military. I'm sure she knows how to fight. She actually was given kind of an award or recognition by Army General John Abizad for I think, the morale of the troops. She was kind of, you can imagine that. She seemed like a cheerleader, you know, kind of that, you know, cheering on America, cheering on just protesting in the right way, and then stopping bad actors. And she's this little bitty girl, punches this guy who's breaking out the windows and knocks his, it, as you just said. But I wanted to paint the picture. So they've gotten a $5 million settlement. I guess it's her estate, her husband. I don't know about her mother, Mickey Whitloff. But anyway, that's been settled. And thanks to Judicial Watch for making that happen. But now restoring military honors. And, of course, these Trump-appointed people from Justice Department and the military are all over reversing this. And it's just good news. I think that's good news, Joe. Don't you? Don't you feel like you had a lot to do with that, because you reported on this so faithfully? Isn't that satisfying?
It is, because the original decision was not just. And another bit of news is this investigation is going to continue. And Judicial Watch, and we are certainly going to pursue this as well to find out how the general reached that decision in February of 2021. There's going to be efforts made to obtain every scrap of paper in the U.S. government related to that decision and where it originated and whose idea it was in the first place. And I'm going to tell you right now, my money's not on the general. My money is that it came from somewhere else higher up. And so we'll get the answer to that, and we'll find out, very likely find out just how political that decision was to deny her what was rightfully hers based on no investigation, based on media speculation, just, oh, well, this is what we saw in the news, and therefore she's brought dishonor to the Air Force. Well, no. And in fact, if you had done an investigation, you'd find out that she used her training as a military policewoman, who, by the way, she fought, hand-fought jihadi in Afghanistan, who had burrowed out of the prison concertina wire and was trying to escape. She and another female military policewoman were fighting this jihadi in hand-to-hand combat until their comrades arrived and helped take this person back into custody. This was a tough woman, and she knew what she was doing, and that's why I am confident that's why she felt she had to act when Zachary Alam was so out of control, and to stop what he was doing, because you could just see it on her face. She knew that this had gotten just so out of control, and something bad was going to happen. And sadly, it happened to her.
Wow. Well, we are watching and covering history, Joe. This is the stuff that history books will be, you know, who knows which story is going to prevail, which story. Whether the truth is going to prevail is what I'm really meant to say. But we've done our part to try to make it happen. And so you and I have a lot more conversations ahead. I know we do. And I just thank you for your reporting. I want to tell people again that he has an article on this whole thing with Ashley. There's a lot to it. Restoration of military honors for Ashley Babbitt strikes back against a tide of January 6th lies. And that again is at HennemanReports.com. Joe publishes there all the time. And Blaze, of course, is where he publishes his... He publishes both, I think, there, but there's probably more on Henneman Reports. HennemanReports.com. So, Joe, thanks so much. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon. God bless you, sir.
Yeah, God bless you, and thank you for having me.
Okay, my pleasure. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Did you know that since Roe v. Wade was passed, and that was back in 1973, over 66 million babies have been aborted in the United States? That's nearly one in five pregnancies terminated. With the abortion pill now available at local pharmacies and through the mail, a woman's bathroom now has become the scene of the crime. And that's where she tragically expels her child. We have to stop this, and you know how to do that. Preborn is a master at saving these babies and their moms. Go to preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, all right, this is Sandy Rios, and this is my chance to thank you for listening. I do appreciate, even though I can't see you, I do hear from you. I do appreciate your email to me, and I do appreciate the phone calls that you make. And just getting some feedback is really, really very nice. Through the years, I've got used to talking to myself alone in a room. I never thought I would get used to this, but I guess I'm getting better at it. Someday, I'll really learn how to do this. But it's great to have your feedback. And so I encourage you to call me at 662-821-2040, 662-821-2040, and leave a message. And many times we'll use these messages on the air. We haven't done that in a while, and that's my fault, but we will get to that. But I will listen to them for sure. And you can write me at sandy@afr.net. I really, really enjoy your interactions. You find us on any social media platform, and you can find, of course, the podcast on any podcast platform. AFR.net is home base, and SandyRios.com is my website, and you can listen pretty easily here as well. Well, friends, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.